on the hits. Forget.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dan Novak, and Faith Perlow. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
American businessman Elon Musk has offered to buy Twitter and take the company private. The plans were made public Thursday in a filing Twitter made with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Musk heads the companies Tesla and SpaceX. He has been declared the world's richest person by Forbes magazine, with an estimated worth of $219 billion. Musk's latest move comes after Twitter recently confirmed that his past investments had already given him a 9.2% share in the company. The new filing said Musk had proposed buying the remaining shares of Twitter at $54.20 per share. The offer puts a valuation of the social media company at about $43 billion. Musk told Twitter his proposed price was his best and final offer. He has not provided any details about financing plans. Musk said if his offer is rejected, he would reconsider his position as a shareholder. In his government filing, Musk said he invested in Twitter because he believes in its potential to be the platform for free speech around the world. He added, however, that he now thinks the only way Twitter can become such a platform is to be transformed into a private company. Twitter said it had received Musk's offer and will decide whether it is in the best interests of shareholders to accept it or continue to operate as a publicly traded company. Daniel Ives is an industry expert with the investment company Wedbush Securities. He said in a note to clients he believes Twitter will accept Musk's offer, which he called an aggressive, hostile takeover of the company. Ives added that it would be difficult for any other individual or groups to come forward with a comparable offer. In the past, Musk has been critical of some of Twitter's policies related to free speech issues. He recently created a poll on Twitter that asked users if they believed the service was committed to permitting free speech for all individuals. In the latest government filing, Musk said Twitter has great potential and he thinks that he is the right person to unlock that potential. Twitter has not done as well as some other social media companies in recent years. It reported a net loss of $221 million for 2021. The loss was largely tied to a settlement of a lawsuit by shareholders who said the company had misled investors. The shareholders accused the company of misleading them about how much its user base was growing and how much users interacted with its platform. Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey resigned as chief executive officer in late November, and the position was given to Parag Agrawal. I'm Brian Lynn.
Jerusalem's Church of the Holy Sepulchre is believed to be the site of Jesus' crucifixion and burial. It is one of the holiest sites in Christianity. Pressed against a wall of the church is a stone that contains writings and marks created by centuries of pilgrims. But the 2.5 by 1.5 meter stone turned out to be far more important when its other side was uncovered during recent repair work at the church. Researchers believe the design on the long-hidden part of the stone is evidence that it was once the front of a high altar. The altar is the center of a church where religious ceremony takes place. It would have been in use centuries ago. On the stone would have been pieces of glass, pieces of small, finely made marble, said Amit Ra'em. He is an archaeologist for the Israel Antiquities Authority who researched the stone with Ilya Berkovich of the Austrian Academy of Sciences. They said the design combines classical Byzantine and early Islamic art, in which small pieces of colorful marble are used to fill in circular cuttings on the stone. It stood at the sanctuary of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, Ra'em said. Similarly decorated altars have been found inside churches in Rome dating to the 12th and 13th centuries, the researchers said. They believe the stone fits with past archaeological findings and with pilgrims' accounts of the creation of the church. The Crusaders, a Christian military mission, founded the church and formed its main altar in 1149. The altar was used by the Catholic clergy to celebrate Mass until the Crusaders left Jerusalem, Ra'em said. Afterwards, it was used by the Greek Orthodox Church until it was damaged in a fire in 1808. The altar was forgotten until the recent repair work, Ra'em said. The researchers' findings are expected to be released by the end of the year by Israel's Exploration Society. Archbishop Aristarchos of Constantina is with the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate of Jerusalem. He welcomed such research at the church. Works from people of art, people of archaeology, contribute to us, contribute to the belief of the church, to the conviction of the church that this is the place on which Jesus Christ was crucified, buried, and from which he came to resurrection, he told Reuters. I'm Dan Novak.
Everyday Grammar, we take a closer look at several ways we can express our thanks and appreciation. We will use the well-known 1984 film, The Karate Kid, as an example of how we can show our gratitude. Firstly, we will look at appreciation. When we appreciate someone, we are grateful for what they have done for us. Let's look at this scene from The Karate Kid. After Daniel is pushed down a hill on his bike, Mr. Miyagi fixes Daniel's bike. Pay careful attention to how Daniel uses the verb appreciate and the adverb really.
Hey, did you fix my bike?
Aye.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I really appreciate that.
In the example, the word that refers to the act of fixing the bike. Daniel could have said, I appreciate that. But adding the adverb really makes his statement even stronger. I really appreciate that. English speakers often use the verb appreciate with a direct object. In other words, they often use appreciate as a transitive verb. A common structure is subject plus appreciate plus object. For example, a person might say, I appreciate your help, or he appreciates your kindness. To express extremely strong feelings, you could use the adverb really, as in, I really appreciate your help, or he really appreciates your kindness. Along with the verb appreciate, English speakers also use the verb thank. This verb appears without a subject in the phrase thank you. English speakers sometimes shorten thank you even further. They sometimes just say thanks. The difference is one of formality. In the previous example from The Karate Kid, Daniel said thank you. This was one of the first encounters between Mr. Miyagi and Daniel, so it is more formal. But note how Daniel uses thanks once he knows Mr. Miyagi better.
Thanks for helping me out with my friends.
The general structure of the sentence is thanks for plus gerund ing. You can make any number of statements with this basic structure. For example, you could say, thanks for calling, or thanks for being a good friend. There are other ways of expressing our gratitude that do not always use the verbs appreciate or thank you. If we are in unexpected or surprising situations, like a birthday party, we can express appreciation by using the modal should. It is often used in a negative sense, as in, you shouldn't have gotten me such a nice gift. The general structure for such a statement is this. You shouldn't have plus verb with past participle. In our final example from The Karate Kid, Daniel used a similar negative modal phrase with can't to express his surprise and thankfulness for Mr. Miyagi's birthday present, a car.
I can't believe it. Oh. Oh, wow. What a gift. You're the best friend I ever had.
Daniel tried to refuse the gift by saying, oh no, I can't believe it. It refers to the car that Mr. Miyagi gave to Daniel. The structure for this phrase is I can't believe plus noun. Daniel also used other phrases to express his thankfulness, like, what a gift. You're the best friend I've ever had. Today, we looked at how we can express our appreciation and thankfulness to others. We can use the verbs appreciate and thank. We can use adverbs, like really, to make our expressions of thanks stronger. And we can use other expressions like, you shouldn't have, and I can't believe it. Let's end this report with a homework assignment. Think about ways that you express thanks in your native language. Translate those terms or expressions into English and write them to us in the comments section of our website. I'm Faith Perlow.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of America's 37th president.
I, Richard Bilhouse Nixon, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office.
That I will faithfully execute the office
of President of the United States.
Of President of the United States.
Richard Nixon was sworn into office on January 20th, 1969. Nixon began his presidency at a difficult time. American forces, allied with the Army of South Vietnam, were continuing to fight against the communist forces of North Vietnam. Thousands of soldiers and civilians were dying. The Americans and South Vietnamese were making little progress, and there were anti-war demonstrations in the United States. There were also demonstrations against racial injustice. The issues that divided the nation also divided families and friends. At the same time, fighting the war meant there was less government money available to fight social problems. The last president, Lyndon Johnson, had proposed new legislation to help poor people and minorities. In some cases, Congress approved less money than he had requested. In other cases, lawmakers did not approve any money at all. The new president seemed well prepared to deal with the difficulties of being president. He was known for his ability to fight, to lose, and to keep trying. Richard Nixon was born in California. His family was poor. When he was about 10 years old, he harvested vegetables to help earn money for his family. He earned the money that he needed to go to college. Then he decided to study law. He was among the top students in his class. During World War II, Nixon served in the Navy in the Pacific. When he came home, he ran for a seat in Congress and won. As a member of the House of Representatives, Nixon became known for his part in the Alger Hiss case.
I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States.
Alger Hiss was a former official in the State Department. He had been accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusations. Nixon demanded a congressional investigation. Other members of the House thought the issue should be dropped, but Nixon succeeded and led the investigation. While never convicted of espionage, Hiss was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury that investigated the case. He was sentenced to prison. Some Americans disliked Richard Nixon for the way he treated people during the investigation. They felt that some of his attacks were unfair. At that time, fear of communism was very strong. Critics thought he was using the situation for his own gain to improve his political future. In 1950, Richard Nixon ran for the Senate. Nixon, a Republican, competed against Democrat Helen Gehagan Douglas, a former actress and three-time California congresswoman. During the often bitter campaign, he accused her of not recognizing the threat of communism in America. He also said that Douglas was pink right down to her underwear, a reference to her being sympathetic to communism. In response, Congresswoman Douglas gave Nixon a nickname he would never completely lose, Tricky Dick. Nixon won the election. Two years later, in 1952, the Republican Party chose him as its candidate for vice president. The candidate for president was Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower and Nixon easily defeated the Democratic Party candidates, Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson and Alabama Senator John Sparkman. They won again in 1956. During his 8 years as vice president, Nixon visited 60 countries. He faced violent protests during a visit to South America in 1958. The following year, he visited the Soviet Union. He and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev had what became known as the Kitchen Debate. It took place in Moscow as they visited a model of a kitchen that might be found in an American house.
Давайте так, телевидение, конечно, можно, но телевидение можно выступать, никого здесь нет, а потом это положите на склад.
The debate was about world peace. Nixon at one point told Khrushchev that he did not know everything, but there were light moments as well.
Не уступай.
Майна звонтел. А майна can match American lawyer.
Адвокату.
No question about that.
Адвокат, вы адвокат капитализма, я адвокат коммунизма. Вот давайте мы посоревнуемся.
All that I can say from the way you talk and the way you dominate the conversation, you would have made a good lawyer yourself.
In 1960, Nixon accepted the Republican nomination for president. He had many years of political experience and had gained recognition as vice president. Many people thought he would win the national election easily, but he lost to the young John Kennedy. It was the closest presidential election since 1984. After losing to Kennedy, Nixon moved back to California. Then, in 1962, he tried to defeat Governor Edmund Pat Brown, a Democrat, and lost. In conceding defeat, Nixon gave a final press conference in which he told reporters,
"For 16 years, ever since the Hiss case, you've had a lot of fun. You've had an opportunity to attack me, and I think I've given as good as I've taken. I leave you gentlemen now, and you will now write it, you will interpret it, that's your right. But as I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore."
Nixon's political career seemed to be over. He moved to New York City and worked as a lawyer. But he made it clear that he was not ruling out a return to public life at some point in the future. Many Republicans began to see Richard Nixon as the statesman they wanted in the White House. By then, President Johnson had decided not to run for re-election in 1968. His Democratic Party was divided. The Republicans believed they had a good chance to win the election. Nixon campaigned hard against the Democratic candidate, Hubert Humphrey. Humphrey was vice president under Johnson, and had to defend the president's unpopular policies on the Vietnam War. Some Americans thought that the war should be expanded. Many others demanded an immediate withdrawal. Both Humphrey and Nixon promised to work for peace in Vietnam. On Election Day, voters chose Nixon. He narrowly won the popular vote, but collected many more electoral votes than Humphrey. On the day after his victory, Richard Nixon spoke to a gathering of supporters. He told them that the great objective of his administration from the start would be to bring the American people together. Once in office, President Nixon proposed legislation to deal with problems at home. He called his proposals the New Federalism. One proposal was for revenue sharing. Under his plan, the federal government would share tax money with state and local governments. For 3 years, Congress objected. Then, in 1972, the revenue sharing plan was finally approved. Lawmakers also approved legislation for some of Nixon's other ideas. One changed the way American men were drafted into military service for the war. The new law said young men would now have their names chosen in a lottery system. Many people had criticized the earlier system, which they said chose too many poor people and racial minorities. These were the men who were fighting and dying in Vietnam. Congress also approved a change to the Constitution to decrease the voting age from 21 to 18. Supporters of the amendment said if people were old enough to fight and die in war, then they were old enough to vote. The amendment became law when three-fourths of the states approved it in 1971. On another issue, Nixon proposed to build a system to defend against missile attacks. He said it was needed to protect American missile bases. Congress approved the idea in 1969. Critics said it would only intensify the arms race with the Soviet Union. Nixon's first appointments to the nation's highest court also caused much debate. He named two conservative judges from the South, Clement Haynsworth and G. Harold Carswell. Lawmakers said Haynsworth had been unfair to blacks in his decisions and that Carswell was not prepared for the job. Congress rejected both nominations to the Supreme Court. President Nixon faced these disappointments and others, but he still had moments to celebrate during his first term. One came on July 20, 1969. On that day, he and millions of people around the world watched as two American astronauts became the first humans to land on the moon.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. I just can't tell you how proud we all are. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.